The 18th chapter is the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and last week we had done an introduction to this chapter. As we said, it ties up the loose ends. There are certain points in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord feels need further explanation, and so that is done in the 18th chapter. Also, we have a brief summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita is done in this chapter. And it helps us to further clarify certain doubts, certain questions that may have arisen. So we had talked about that in detail last week. So as happens in many of the chapters, this chapter also starts with a question by the student. So Arjuna Uvach. So the first verse of chapter 18. Arjuna Uvach.
Arjuna Uvach.
Sanyasyasya Mahabaho.
Sanyasyasya Mahabaho.
Tatvamichami Veditum.
Tatvamichami Veditum.
Tyagasya Charishikesha.
Tyagasya Charishikesha.
Prithakeshi Nishudana.
Prithakeshi Nishudana.
So Arjuna Uvach. Arjuna said, O Mahabaho, O powerful one, the great one. Because until now, he, at least when he started the Gita, he was considering Krishna as maybe his friend or his charioteer. But slowly his respect for the teacher grows, especially after the 11th chapter when he sees the Vishwarup. He sees the entire universe in the form of Lord Krishna. Then he realizes that this is Bhagavan, the Lord himself, who is standing in front of me as my teacher. So he says, O Mahabaho, O great powerful one, Sanyasyasya Tatvam Ichchami Veditum. Tatvam means the essence of sannyas. I want to know. Ichchami, I wish to. Veditum, to know, to learn, to understand. Not only sannyas, but Tyagasyacha. Also the essence of Tyaga. I want to know what is Tyaga. I want to know what is Sannyas or Rishikesha. Now, Rishikesha is one of the names of Krishna, and I think on this side, chapter 1 is the verse 1 is on this side. In the fourth line, Rishikesha is explained in different ways. One is Rishik Isha. In the fourth line, you see Rishik Isha. Rishik means the senses. So, Krishna is addressed as the Isha, as the Lord of the senses. Why is Krishna called the Lord of the senses? Because the senses are controlled by the mind, as we know, the eyes, ears, nose, skin, and tongue. So what I see, hear, taste, smell, and touch is determined by the mind. The mind decides what I should see, what I should not see, what I should hear. So is the mind the Lord of the senses? Then it should be the mind. Then why is Krishna? Because the consciousness within, the Lord within, is the illuminer of the mind. It is the one that gives energy to the mind to see. And the mind then goes out through the eyes and ears and nose and so on to see, hear, smell, taste and touch. That's why the consciousness within is considered the Lord of the mind, Rishikesha, Rishik Isha. So, as I have even told in my meditation class, one of the very powerful meditative practices which we can all do, it's very easy, is after you have, in the morning after you wake up, if you meditate or if you do your, you know, whatever, your, then go out and before the sun has risen or early morning, just go in the backyard and just close your eyes. And what will happen is you will hear the sounds of the various birds, you know, in the trees. And so I try to do that every morning. Is not only you will hear the sounds of the birds, but you may hear traffic or the neighbor's garage door or the heating on. So when your eyes are closed and you are listening and you're trying to distinguish each bird and each sound, pay attention to not only the sound, but who is within me that is motivating the mind to think. That is the, so because the mind is trying to decide. So what is that? So pay attention to the consciousness within, and that's a very powerful meditative practice. It just takes 2 or 3 minutes And you will find that you slowly this inner essence will become clear. What is it? That is the Rishikesh. What is the Lord of the senses? So pay attention to that. So that's a very, very beautiful, very powerful meditative exercise. So he's addressed as Rishikesh. One is Rishik Isha, the Lord of the senses. Other is Rishikesh. Kesha means hair. As we know, Krishna had very beautiful curly hair. So Rishikesh means one who has very beautiful curly hair. So there are two ways of splitting this Rishikesh. That's why Vishnu also is said to be have beautiful hair. So he says, Sanyasya cha Mahabaho Tattvam Ichhami Veditum and Tyagasya cha. And I wish to know the essence of Sanyasa and Tyaga, both prithak, separately. Clearly, I want you to tell me clearly. Why does he use the word clearly? Because throughout the Gita, if you have followed, Krishna at various places uses Tyaga, Sanyasa, and they seem to be connected, they seem to be similar. So for a student, it might be easy to get confused. And so Arjuna had actually had studied before the Upanishads and had some knowledge. So that's why he could ask such a question. Prithak Keshi Nishudana. Oh, Keshi Nishudana. That's another word of Krishna. So he uses three words for Krishna. One, he calls him Mahabaho, the mighty one. Rishikesha, the Lord of the senses, and Keshi Nishudana. Keshi is an interesting story. I'll just cover it briefly. As you know, Krishna had, you know, was living in Gokul, you know, with Yashoda because his parents, Vasudeva, had dropped him there. And Kansa came to know that Krishna is there and he's the one that is going to be eventually my death. And so he sends various demons. He sent Putana, you know, who to poison him and all. And of course, Krishna was not. And then this Keshi was a very interesting demon. He's actually a very powerful demon, one of his most powerful. And he sent him and Keshi made himself into a giant horse, huge horse. The horse was so big that it was riding on the earth and the body was way in the skies. And there was so much noise that the dust was rising. The entire earth, the space was filled with dust. And the sound of his neighing was so powerful that even the devtas in heaven were afraid of this mighty demon who is going to attack this little child who is only a few days old. And so Keshi appears in front of Krishna and tries to attack him. And of course Krishna, as we know, it is interesting. It is said that the first 11 years and 52 days of his life, 11 saal 52 din, he was in an incarnation of the Supreme Lord himself, Brahman, the total Brahman had manifested in him for only 11 years and 52 days. That was when the total consciousness was in him. That was the maximum power. And that's when he not only, you know, slayed a lot of demons, but he did the Ras Leela, you know, the Ras Leela, which is so much honored and respected in our Hindu culture. It is the dance of the Paramatma with the Atmas, the total consciousness dancing with the... Some people say that Swami Chinmayananda himself says that the Krishna did not dance. He stayed in the middle and he's in his flute. When he played the flute, the gopis were dancing around him. Just as the consciousness within us does not move, but our hands, feet, speech, eyes, everything work in the presence of this consciousness. So Krishna was the center in which, with his flute, all the dance was going on. And the gopis imagined or visualized that Krishna is dancing with us. But he, as the total consciousness, remained. So anyway, so the first 11 years and 52 days, he had the supreme power in him. And after that, when he left Gokul and went to Mathura to fight with Kamsa, then he said, Vishnu. The power of Vishnu was in him. That's why he's called as an avatar of Vishnu. So that's why the first 11 years and 52 days we honor, because that's when he had the supreme power in him. And then of course he had Vishnu's power and he did do some miraculous deeds, but not as much as in his first few days. So anyway, so this horse, this demon powerful, comes and attacks Krishna, and it says Krishna put his hand in the mouth of this demon and his hand kept growing bigger and bigger and bigger, and finally he was choked. He couldn't breathe, this horse. He tried to attack, but Krishna. And then he fell down, he was choked and he couldn't breathe. And at that time, it says Krishna took his hands and split his body in half. So that's why he's called Keshi Nishudana, one who destroyed the demon Keshi. So here Arjuna asks the question, it's not clear to me what is the essence of Tyaga and what is the essence of Sannyasa. And sometimes we mix one with the other, you know, what is Tyaga, what is Sannyasa. And so that's why he says, I wish to know clearly. I want you to tell me precisely, exactly. I'm not sure, maybe this or maybe that. I want to know exactly. I want to know clearly without any doubt. Sometimes when people say clearly, then, you know, sometimes the answer seems very rude. But what he wants to know is what is the exact difference between Tyaga and Sannyasa. So talking about giving a clear answer reminds me of a little story. So there was this brother who was traveling. And so after a few days, he calls his younger brother, you know, how's everything in the house? Yeah, everything is okay in the family. How's my cat? This was his dear cat. He had had her for 8 years. He said, your cat is dead. He said, dead? Why did you say it like that? You know, so I didn't want such a blunt answer. You should say politely and diplomatically. Don't just tell me I'm dead. I'm so hurt. Huh? Yeah, no, he just said dead, so he felt very bad. He said, no, that's not the way. You don't be blunt like that. What should I have said? He said, look, you should have said, cat, you know, we left accidentally the door open, and the cat went out, and then the cat climbed the roof, and then we had to call the firemen, and the firemen were trying to rescue the cat, and the cat got scared and jumped and broke his neck and died. You know, that's the way you should say. Don't just say cat died. He said, okay, I'm sorry. So then after a few questions, he asked, so how is mother? He says, mother is on the roof and the firemen are trying to bring her down. So that's why he says, you know, don't give me the answer clearly without any doubt. And so depending on the student's question, the teacher can know. Once somebody asks Swami Ishwarananda, how do you decide what to talk, how to, what level? He says, depends on the student's question. So here we can see Arjuna is a very advanced student. See, you and I would never even think about, you know, Tyaga and Sannyasa, vithe ekhi hai, you know, it's the same thing. But the fact that he has thought about it, that means he has been listening for the 17 chapters. That is the sign of a good student who not only listens, but if there's any doubt, he wants to clarify that. So that is the beauty of this question, that he wants to know clearly. Now, Tyaga and Sannyas are both defined as giving up. But there is a difference, which we'll go into more detail. But just in brief, Tyaga is giving up the fruit of action, which will be covered in the second verse. And Sannyasa is renunciation. Renunciation means total giving up even of the ego. So when we think of giving up, we think of running away. You know, like Arjuna was saying, I want to run away because I'm tired of this and I do not want to be the cause of so much misery. I want to go in the forest and meditate. You know, even in one chapter, he even says, when you say that, you know, meditation is superior to action, then why are you asking me to engage in this ghor karma, you know, in this karma? Why don't you let me go? So we think of sannyas as running away. But then if you look at the example of people like Buddha or Jesus, they left their home, but it was not a running away. When Buddha left his home, he had a desire to know the answers to some major questions of life. What is suffering? How can I overcome it? And he gave up his kingdom, his wife, his newborn child, and left not to run away from society, but to himself understand these questions. And then he became a guiding light for, you know, millions and billions of Buddhists throughout the world. Then it is said even Jesus, he left for approximately 20 years. And he was wandering the forest and nobody knows where he went. Some people say, some authorities say that he actually went to India and he spent several years in Banaras studying the Because some of the siddhis he had acquired, you know, the ability to raise the dead and the ability to heal the sick and the ability to divide food, you know, the bread and all he could divide. He said those siddhis are described in the spiritual literature, and they feel that he may have acquired them from there. Also, his teachings, Jesus' teachings are so different because the society at that time where he was living in the Middle East, but there was so much violence and conflict. And then he brought this message of peace, you know, turn the other cheek, love thy neighbor as thyself, talking about the oneness of all. So they feel that these ideas that he had were already very prevalent in India. And they think, again, I'm not an authority on that, but some authorities feel that when he had that 20 years of sannyas or disappearance, he actually went and studied from somewhere because he then came back a very evolved student who taught. So these people did not run away from society. They left, but for a higher purpose, for a higher goal, for their evolution. So that's why Arjuna's question is very pertinent. And also, Swami Ishwarananda ji says this was his last chance. It's the 18th chapter. He knows the war is about to start. And then they both will become busy in the war and they're not going to have time to discuss because this is the end. And so this is his last opportunity to ask the question. In fact, it is very interesting. A few months later, after the Kurukshetra war was over, and Arjuna and Krishna were just sitting one day in the evening and, you know, just talking, relaxing, because they were good friends and also relatives. And Arjuna says, you know, Krishna, remember before the Mahabharata war, you had given me this beautiful discourse. I wish to hear that again. Can you tell me? Because, you know, again, not everything came to me. Krishna said, I can't. He said, at that time, I was in that yogic state. That state which I was so, you know, evolved that these verses just flowed out. So you can't every time do that. It was that situation. Again, and of course, Krishna was the Lord, but again, he was in a human form. So that's why this 18 chapter are the highest knowledge that came from the Lord himself in a yogic state where he is tuned with the highest. So the question is, why should we renounce? Why should we give up? What is the purpose? Because they say that anything you hold on to becomes a bondage. Anything that you cannot give up. See, I cannot live without this individual. Okay, then that becomes a bondage. Because if tomorrow that individual decides they don't, you know, want to live with you, then you become sorrowful. Or I cannot live without this thing. Or I cannot live without this job. Or I cannot live without my dog or my cat. Or whatever, I'm so attached to my car. I love it. And then tomorrow it gets wrecked in an accident. So anything that I hold on to, even ideas, you know, some people are so caught up on ideas, especially now with elections coming. So, you know, the situation is so, you know, so much problem, conservative and liberal and ultra-right and ultra-left. All these fights are going on. Why? Because people are holding on to ideas or even memories, you know. They say, but there are sweet memories. Shouldn't we hold on to the sweet memories? You know, before marriage, my life was so fine. I was free. I could go anywhere, do anything. My university days. I still remember how as friends we used to hang out till 4, 5 in the morning, you know, having batata pav. And I remember in Bombay we used to go have this pav bhaji in Paidoni at 3 o'clock in the morning. All these great. So shouldn't we hold on to those pleasant memories? They say, no, whatever you hold on to, they become a bondage, because then you say, I wish I could relive that. You know, I wish, I want to be free again. So then you start looking for freedom. Why? Because there's something in the past that I enjoyed and I want to relive it. So that's why they say anything that you hold on to. What they are saying is that enjoy the experience and let it go. Do not hold on to the experience. Do not hold on to any, even an individual. Because this world is temporary. This is a changing world. What is right today will be wrong tomorrow. What I love today, I won't love tomorrow. So they say renounce and become free. If you truly want to live a life of freedom, Do not hold on to things. Things will come and go. You say, okay, this happy situation is here. It will come. Tomorrow I'll be unhappy. This unhappy situation is here. That will also go. And tomorrow I'll... So happy and unhappy, joy and sorrow, success and failure, heat and cold. It was cool. Now it's going to become hot. Then it will be 110 degrees. And then people will say, oh, I wish there was no cold weather. This is the world is like that. Health and ill health. So holding on makes you bound and renounce makes you free. That's why Tyaga and Sannyasa has been glorified in our scriptures. Giving up is good. Giving up, again, does not mean giving up everything. You know, people say, well, you know, Buddha gave up everything and left, but I cannot. You know, I have a family and you know, I don't have that kind of vairagya. I don't have that kind of dispassion. I have a family to take care of, my job, and so many people depend on me. And, you know, I have to take care of my old parents, and then my children have still to go to college. And how can I give? Should I give up everything, or should I give up part of it? You know, maybe I give up some things. So these kind of questions come to us when we hear the word Tyaga, and we hear the word Sannyasa. So that's why Arjuna wants to know. And also in our Upanishads, if you read the Kaivalya Upanishad, there is this famous mantra which we always chant when Swamiji's come. You know, when any Swamiji's come, we offer him the Purnakumbha, the coconut with the water, and then we chant na karmana na prajaya dhane na tyage naike amritatva man shuhu. So what this mantra means is neither through karma, nor through praja, nor through dhana, you can achieve immortality. So what they are saying is that the goal of human life is to attain immortality. And people think of immortality as living forever, 100 years, 200 years. That's a miserable existence. After, you know, certain age, then even the human body becomes a burden and you have pain and you are, you know, bedridden. And so immortality does not mean living forever in the human body, because that is misery. Yeah, when you're young, it's okay. You say, oh, I want to live forever. After certain age, you say, you know, Bhagwan, le jao, you know, take me from here, because I've seen enough of this world and I'm sick and I'm in bed. And even we sometimes pray, you know, when their parents and grandparents are very old, you know, oh God, may release them from the sorrow. So what do they mean by immortality and what do they mean by tyaga? So in this shloka, it says, na karmana, na prajaya, na dhanena. So what happens is that in this world, when we try to achieve anything, when I try to get anything, there are three means I use. Either karma means by my own action, praja means with the help of others, or dhana means by wealth. So say I want to get elected. Now there are 25 candidates for mayor. I want to become the 26th candidate. I also want to stand for mayor. As we know, 25 people are standing. So if I want to become mayor of Bakersfield, so what do I do? Either I can do it by my own activity, by karma. So I go to each house and tell them, you know, vote for me. And then I, you know, and I spend a lot of time in, you know, campaigning and canvassing and telling people why I have done what I have done, giving speeches and, you know, trying to promote myself. So that is one, by karma. Or by praja. Praja means with the help of others. So I take the help of my neighbors, my friends, my relatives, my employees, and my co-workers. And I say, look, you know, can you help me? So then they talk to their friends, they talk to their relatives, and they spread the word that this person is a very good candidate. You should vote for him for mayor. Or the third is by dhana, by wealth. I have a lot of money. So what I do, I buy ads. I buy ads in all the newspapers. I buy ads in all the TV stations. How much work I have done. What is my qualification? What are my qualities? So in the world, when you want to achieve anything, these are the three methods we use. And if you find the same thing in everything. You want to build a factory. You can either do it with your own effort or with the help of other people or with wealth. So anything you want to do in this world, these are the three methods. But the Upanishad says to get immortality. And what do they mean by immortality? Immortality does not mean living forever, but understanding that I am immortal, I never die. As Krishna tells him in the second chapter, right itself, he says, look, all these people here, they were never born and they will never die. Why? Because every one of us is that immortal spirit, the Om, the consciousness. Our true nature is immortal. This body will perish. This body, which is the product of food, is born and will die. Anything that is born will perish. Whatever, like this building was not there before 2006. It is here now, and then maybe in a few years, if we outgrow it, you know, we may have to break it and create a new, bigger building. So anything that is created is bound to perish. Anything that is born is bound to die. And if you hold on to that, that I am this body, then for sure you will perish. But if you say I am the eternal spirit, I am the consciousness who at this moment is playing this role of Anil or Satish or and this is Kusum and this is my name and I am male and female and young and old, then you will not perish. The body will perish, but I will live forever. And in fact, all of us are that one supreme spirit. We are all one. There is no difference. There is no difference between me and her and her, and between me and the tree and the animal and the plant and the bird and the fish. We are all that one consciousness with different names and forms. Just as mud, when it becomes different parts, blue part, green part, yellow part, red part, it is nothing but that one mud playing different roles with different names and forms. So once you understand that and you give up tyaga, you give up your attachment to the body, mind and intellect, give up attachment to the objects, emotions and thoughts that we are so attached to, then you realize your immortal nature. We are all immortal, but we think we are mortal. So that's all the tyaga is, to give up attachments to the lower and hold on to the higher. That's what Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda says. Detach and attach. Detach from the lower and attach to the higher. So that is the advantage of tyaga. That as long as it, again, it does not mean that you should give up work. We'll talk in more detail in the next verse. They're not saying that you give up doing work, give up the attitude with which you are working. That is the only thing that is required. It is a change of vision. It is a change of thinking. It is not giving up of work, but it is giving up the attachment to the work, the attachment to the fruits, and the idea of ego, I and mine. And that will be covered in more detail in the second verse. Any questions, any comments about this so far?
So if we renunciate, but if we don't abandon, it's no good, right?
Yeah, actually, it is sequential. Abandonment comes first. That means fruit of giving up the fruit of action, which is tyaga, comes first. And then renunciation comes second, where you give up the ego or the doership. So it is sequential.
First, so is the abandonment.
First is tyaga and then second is sannyas. Mm-hmm. So first is the abandonment, giving up the fruit of action. Mm-hmm. And the second is renunciation, where you give up the doership, I and my, that way. So it is a sequential process of rethinking your identification with things and beings, rethinking my relationship with my work, with my, you know, co-workers, with my family, with my objects. So it is like reorienting your mind. It's not giving up work, but it is changing the way I think about work. Now that's a good question. Thank you.
So you're saying that he did not because he can't.
Yeah.
Is it because he forgot, or is it that?
No, it's not that he forgot. He said that what came out of me at those 700 verses, those 18 chapters, I was in a yogic state. And then after that, he was in a relaxed state and sitting probably, in the evening after dinner. He didn't want to get involved in all that. And then he knew that Ved Vyas would write it or everything anyway. But no, but I again, you know, that's what is said. It does not mean that he could not, but he said, I'm not in that yogic state. See, that when that inspiration comes, it's like a, you know, somebody composing a poetry or writing an, you know, a beautiful piece of art or drama or something. It, when that inspiration comes, then it just flows out of you. It's effortless. Otherwise, you have to put an effort. He has to sit and think, what was his question? How did I answer? You know, so, but that time it was effortlessly flowing out of him. That's what he, that's what the story goes. But again, I don't know. I mean, of course, he was the Supreme Lord. He could have if he wanted to, but he just said, I was in a different state of mind where it was effortless. Otherwise, here he would have had to sit down and think about it. So that's the difference.
Is that why some masters, you know, they only want to tell their students once, and that's, you know.
Yes. Also because that shows they want them to pay attention. And that's what with Swami Chinmay, that's a good point. Swami Chinmayananda, when he was with his guru, Tapovan Prasad, Tapovan Maharaj said, he said, I will only speak once. And you have to hear it, understand it, and remember it. And if I ask you again, and if you don't answer it correctly, you can leave my ashram. And he had told him, and very strictly, if you do not answer correctly, you can leave. So that's true. That's another thing. The teacher wants the student to pay attention. Otherwise, he'll say, it's okay, I'll listen next time. You know, he's going to repeat anyway. So, yes.
Moms and children.
That's why they don't listen, because they know mom will be repeating.
Four more times after
this. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Is the word sannyas come from a combination of two words?
Yeah, sama nyas. Nyasa means to give up. Sama means to give up completely. Sama nyas, yes. That's, it becomes sannyas, yes.
And when you said, I understand not to remember a good memory. I mean, don't get attached to good or bad memory.
Right.
What about when you do meditation and you feel good, you want to experience that again?
Yeah, that also is an obstacle. That's people who teach meditation say that if you have had a good experience in meditation and if you're trying to recreate that, then what happens is then you are trying to do something. And meditation is actually doing nothing. Meditation is undoing, where you sit and you quieten your mind, and in that silence of that, the body, mind is completely quiet, the body is still, and you know, your breathing is lick, is gentle. You, in that silence, you experience the Lord's presence and the Lord talks to you. So, but if you are trying to experience, then it becomes another thought. And the idea in meditation is to reduce the number of thoughts. Otherwise, it becomes another obstacle in your meditation.
It's still a good habit.
No, you do not sit with any expectation. See, when they say, when you sit for meditation, you are neither a man nor a woman, you are neither a mother or a father or a child or a brother or a sister, you are not a doctor or engineer, you are nobody, you are only a seeker of truth. And a seeker of truth is, again, without any preconditions, without any expectations. So that is called being in the present. You cannot meditate if you are in the past or in the future. If you're trying to recreate, that means you are reliving the past. Or in the future, if I meditate well, then I will experience. But meditation is being in the now. That is meditation. I am here, and that alone is. So, but that's a very good point. A lot of people get caught up in that. Yes, sir?
Body is also considered as temple.
Right.
And you really have to take good care of the body. Where do you draw the line?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. Body is a temple. We have to take care of it. You have to exercise, eat healthy, go to the doctor, take your medicine. But there is a difference between taking care and getting attached to the body. You take care of the body as you take care of your car. You know, you take care of the car, you take it for regular service, oil change and all that. But then tomorrow when the car gets old, then you have no problem giving it up and buying a new car. You go to the dealer and trade it in. So similarly, my body, I know it will get old. So expecting that, but then trying very hard, you know, through plastic surgery and this and that and all, trying to rejuvenate the body. Sooner or later, it is. So the ability to give it up. Okay, now it's time for me to give up this body. Now I'm ready to pick up a new body. So that attitude, so that is called giving up the body. That, okay, it's time to go. That's fine. I'll go happily. go cheerfully instead of crying, oh, why? No, it's okay. Why do I have to leave my relatives and friends? Everything was temporary anyway. When I was born, I should have understood that one day I'll go. So the ability to give up the body, which the saints have, they have the ability. That's why Raman Maharishi, he let them do surgery on him. He was fully awake and he said, you can operate on me. I don't need any anesthesia, because he could detach himself from the body. You and I, we are so attached to this I and my. That's why that, there is a Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapi Hitamukham Tatvam Pushana Pavranu Satya Dharmaya Trishtai. So in the Upanishad, it is said that this body is made of gold. There's one way of interpreting is that my life is surrounded by gold, or this golden body is covering the truth. Satyasyapi Hitam Mukham. The truth is covered by this golden body. So, O sun god, uncover it, so I may experience Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye. You can only experience the truth when you give up this covering of this body, this ego. Again, give up does not mean you have to die to experience the truth. While living, you have to understand, I am not this body. That is called giving up. You take care of the body, but I am not the body. And that's all you have to do. So that's what we said, it's a shift of focus. It's not a change. You still do the same things, but do it with a different attitude. That I chant that verse every morning when I face the east and to the sun god, besides the Gayatri mantra. That mantra is very powerful, because it tells me that I am attached to this body. Oh sun god, please uncover my ignorance, so I may become understand my true nature. So these two mantras are very good to chant when you face east in the morning. I try it whenever I have time to do these.
What is the second mantra?
Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Pihitam Mukham Tattvam Pushana Pavranu Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye. You can Google it. Just put Hiranmayena and the whole mantra will appear. That's what I do. Just put the first word, yeah, Hiranmayena, you will put it and the mantra will appear. Yeah. That's how I find them. Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapi Hitam Mukham. First word, Hiranmayena Patrena. That's the first word. Hiranmayena Patrena means with this golden pot, Satyasyapi Hitam Mukham. The face of truth is covered.
Yeah, I think that is chanted in all the things of what do you call that? We got that video, DVDs, right?
Yes.
In that one, they say that.
Yeah, many places, yeah. It's a very popular mantra.
Upanishad
Ganga, they chant it. Yeah. And also some people translate as Hiranmayena Patrena, this golden pot of the wealth. See, the wealth that I'm so attached to is covering the truth of my being. So either you can translate as the body or the wealth I'm attached to. And O Sun God, uncover this and reduce my attachment to this things and beings. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Durghava. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, Harihi Om Shri Guru Deva Namaha, Harihi Om.